The United Nations has passed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, a neat little document, about 30-some-odd articles long, a traditional West European constitution for the world in terms of rights, human rights, and privileges. Well, now this year, throughout the world, the countries of the world, ours as others, have accepted the task of educating the people of the world along the lines outlined in this declaration. In other words, making them familiar with the declaration, getting some discussion on the declaration, and so forth and so on. Up to this time, as far as we know, there have been no basic researches done on this declaration outside of the field of law. We have already had the American Bar Association comment on this declaration and on the Genocide Convention. And so we have taken this up as one problem. What are the problems in the Declaration of Universal Human Rights? What can you do about those problems? How easy is it going to be to educate people on these levels? What do they think when they read this declaration? Well, that is one, UN, therefore, is one agency that stimulates us to do research. We've got another agency, the UNESCO, United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, about which we've heard a lot on this campus, and I think fortunately, certainly because of my bias again. And the UNESCO works on one particular problem, very bluntly, very agreed upon by the peoples of the world and their leaders and delegates of UNESCO, that tensions which lead to war may be reduced when we have more knowledge about each other. That, in other words, international understanding grows to the extent that knowledge grows. Therefore, we would expect a student of Japanese history to be to understand Japan. What understanding means, well, that they haven't defined. People who've traveled in Europe understand European knowledge about the country. Well, now that's another assumption. That offers itself into a number of neat ways to test and to measure and see to what extent does knowledge affect or even have any direct relationship to understanding a country. So there's another stimulus we get from the UNESCO. I think that perhaps we tend to overlook the stimulation which comes from our own government, from the United States government, from the State Department, from the UNESCO National Commission, and from the United States Mission to the United Nations. The latter is perhaps the most important of the three agencies, the former being the biggest agency, the State Department. Well, let's take a State Department program. What are the concrete effects of the Voice of America broadcast? Suppose you wanted to discredit or discourage the Soviet people from following their leader, Joseph Stalin. What kind of a broadcast would you send to Russia? Would it be one that you would send to a part of the United States to discourage a demagogue there, or would it be the same kind that you would send to Japan or to Germany? And what would be the effects of these broadcasts? This is something that we can study. We don't very often, but we can. The UNESCO National Commission has a number of programs going on across the United States. We have a seminar coming up on a discussion of international understanding through history, through the reorganization of history and geography textbooks. All right, that's a neat little problem. What is that program going to do towards the development of international understanding? In other words, what textbooks would you have to change where, in what countries, written by whom, in order to develop international understanding? The UNESCO National Commission, therefore, may stimulate some of our research and may suggest to us that this whole area of program evaluation is a tough area and one in which the social scientists can adequately work. How about the U.S. mission to the United Nations? Well, they've got a nice little problem today that came up accidentally, certainly in a way unknown to the majority of the American people and from what we know to the majority of the American leadership. Truman's famous Point 4 program. How do you get a international trust run by Indonesians in Java? How much do Indonesians know about the maintenance of such trucks? What will the effect of bringing these trucks, or let's put it in another scale, bulldozers, supposedly brought bulldozers down there, what would bringing bulldozers into Indonesia do to Indonesian economy, social structure, interpersonal relations? These little problems are tremendous. Perhaps one person who's doing work along this line on this campus, a periphery to it, but certainly his data affect this greatly, would be Dr. Oscar Lewis in anthropology. His studies of Tepetlan give us some raise some large questions as to how much the French Fall program can be effective in Latin America with the cultural structure as he perceives. Well, so much for the stimulation from the United States government. Where else do we get stimulation? Well, I might say in passing, we have a number of private organizations. You belong to many, I did too. We all seem to join them. Far Eastern Association, Institute of Pacific Relations, the Social Science Research Council, the Carnegie Foundation for International Peace, et cetera, et cetera. Private organizations which stimulate research. Somebody might take up these proposals, the Quaker proposals for peace, and do a beautiful study on those. Furthermore, we have current world problems that you don't have to belong to an organization to understand or to hear about. The Cold War between the United States and the rest of the world, or between the Soviet Union and the rest of the world. Current world problems afford us a beautiful field for research tasks. Then we have some very interesting final points that are perhaps a little more deep, a little more broad than the rest. We have stimulating books such as Northrop's Meeting of East and West, in which he raises a multitude of hypotheses that could be tested. He is a philosopher, and as a philosopher of his school need not go out and test them, but we falls for us the task of testing some of these hypotheses raised by Northrop. We have Korzybski's Science and Sanity, in which he raises a number of problems about dualism as related, dualistic thinking as related to multi-ordinal thinking and so forth. Now, these are very current in the world today. We have problems that we could ferret out of that and put in an international setting. Finally, as another example, we have Hayakawa's Language in Thought and Action, a book that came out last year, in which his he raises a point in passing for which we have no evidence, but which sounds very stimulating, that when you divide the world into two parts, when you speak in terms of dualism, either or, black or white, up and down, high or low, etc., you essentially are opposing these two, and that therefore dualistic thinking is hostile thinking. So that when you define the world in terms of East and West, you are thinking in terms of East and West opposed to each other, hostily opposed to each other. Well, now these are all hypotheses, but this is where we get some of our stimulation. Now I'd like to go briefly to the settings for research, settings and subjects for research in this field. We have, as I perceive it, three settings. One is the school, the setting of the school. We have the very important role of the teacher and the role that the teacher can play in developing international understanding. So our teachers' colleges, our colleges of education, and our schools become a very important area from which we can gather data. We can gather data, therefore, on college students and on would-be teachers or teachers in the field. We must realize in this study of school populations that a problem of sampling sneaks in all the time. And we get pretty heavy criticism in this field for using too many college students as subjects. The only answer I can give to that particular statement would be something like this, that we must realize that for the most part, it is the college students who become the leaders of the community and of the world. Certainly, the international students who come to our campuses. I think we refer to them here as foreign students. But the international students who come to our campuses go back and become very important leaders in their government. Therefore, it is not always so important to go and study a small village in an Arab country in Saudi Arabia, when one might study the Saudi Arabians on campus here and learn from them, because it is they who will be governing Saudi Arabian affairs in the international world for some time. Then we have the community level. We can operate about four ways in the community level. We can do research on community people, who are not normally associated with the college scene. We can service them, that is to say, we can help them, provide lectures for them, provide training for them, help them in doing what they need done, and we can participate with them in action, in community action towards world peace. Some of you may know what the programs that are going on in our community at this time. All of these actions in the community both stimulate research, and moreover, they provide very clear-cut opportunities for testing our own results to see if they work at all before we give them to some graduate student to go out and try on his own. Finally, in the international scene itself is wide open for research by social scientists. We can work by observing, that is to say, go to the United Nations or go to international conferences and observe, set up categories for observation and observe what goes on, record it, study our data. Furthermore, we have more documents than we can ever handle from the international field, both verbatim and written in recorded form. We can study documents to understand international problems. We have on hand today a tremendous wealth of evidence on concentration camp experiences, the Boder book, B-O-D-E-R. I did not interview the dead, which the University of Illinois Press has published, is an excellent source of material for research. The International Scene Simulators, with its council meetings and committee meetings, and any of us interested in group dynamics find that that is a very exciting field to study and to use as a setting for our research. Finally, in the international scene, perhaps the most important problem at this time, again, this is an individual perception, is mediating. How would you like to be with Admiral Nimitz in Kashmir trying to mediate between a group of Indians and Pakistanis over a very touchy religious, let's see, what would we have? We'd have a religious, economic, political, cultural question. It's a neat little problem, and certainly our mediators are not well enough trained. So we have the study of the problem of mediation, and moreover, the training of mediators themselves. Now, here are some ideas of the basic research problems, and then I'd like to give you some examples of the research itself. The basic research problems in this field are in order, I think, something like this. Measuring instruments. We don't have any ruler in this field yet. We don't have any T maze or Y maze. We don't have any great sociological studies, and the anthropologists are still in the area of not being able to contribute a basic measuring instrument to measure international problems. So the first thing we need, it seems, is instruments to measure this doggone field and be able to say what length there is here, what breadth, what depth. Secondarily, our problem very quickly becomes one of the communication of results without kickback. That is to say, you study a council meeting and you find that a delegate X from country Y participates in such a manner and disrupts the committee meeting. How are you going to communicate that? You write it as a citizen of country G. And how is he going to know that which is nationalistic and that which is post-scientific? Especially, let's say, if he doesn't accept the empirical science that we have in the United States that lives on an aesthetic continuum. It's a little rough, but we have this problem of communicating our results. Then we have the problem of applying our results, primarily in this area. Who's going to apply them? For what purposes? We don't have to wait till we build an atomic bomb in social science to run up against moral and ethical questions. All we have to do is get a hypothesis, and from then on in, we're right in the midst of it. So we have this problem all the time of, suppose we get some data on France, on the means for affecting social change in France, how to bring about social change. Who's going to get it? The Voice of America? The Communist Party? De Gaulle? Who's giving it to them? You have to worry about where your results are going to be applied. We need in the basic research an area that science has blissfully skipped over, perhaps because we're more interested in having practitioners, medical men and such, and the clinicians, than we are in eliminating their jobs. Perhaps science is set up to stimulate their jobs rather than to eliminate their jobs. I'm talking about the area of preventative research. How would you prevent a racial discrimination from becoming a major problem in Hawaii? The Howley are out there now, that's us, and we're raising the roof pretty much. We've influenced the country tremendously since the war. We've flooded Hawaii. How are you going to prevent our going over there without racial discrimination so that we don't build up race hatred, as it sometimes is called, in Hawaii? How are you going to prevent German children from growing up into a nice, strong, healthy Nazi? We have two more basic research problems, one a little more important than the other. We have very highly skilled personnel in this country who contributed greatly toward the winning of the war. There's no doubt about it in social science. And these highly skilled personnel have not as yet found importance enough in working in this area of the development and understanding of international tensions. We just don't have enough skilled personnel working in this field. We've got the personnel, but they're just not working in the field as yet. I teach a course here in Psychology of International Relations, and the four of us, three students and myself, sit there and have a wonderful time. There just does not seem to be yet an interest in this field. We also have the problem that is raised by everybody else, and I put it in here more as a courtesy toward you rather than as a problem of my own, that we need money. But it seems to me that the money will come as soon as we can turn out some decent research to warrant it. I'm one of those people who seems to feel that way anyway. Well, now how about some examples of research? What I'd like to do is review for you in general what I personally am studying, because I know my own work pretty much more thoroughly than I do others, and secondarily because there isn't very much being done around the country that is in publishable form as yet. In the area of instrument building, we have an inventory which measures hostility, a verbal inventory, that is to say a verbal test which measures the different categories of hostility which individuals express.